Welcome to the Speaking of Women's Health podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Holly Thacker, the Executive Director of Speaking of Women's Health, and I'm back in the Sunflower House this April. It is springtime, and April is, what is it, April showers bring May flowers, but we have flowers in April, and whenever I see daffodils, it always reminds me of my son Emerson, who was born in April. And certainly when the days start to get brighter and longer, our moods naturally elevate. And fragrances like from flowers can certainly affect the mood, as well as things of beauty. So on this podcast, I'm going to talk about stress and ways to reduce stress, because April is Stress Awareness Month. And stress is defined as any stimulus, fear, pain, anything that disturbs the normal physiologic equilibrium that our body has. Put simply, stress is a response to daily life forces. Now, the right amount of stress can actually be a positive force. Not all stress is bad. It can help motivate us to do our best work and keep us alert and energetic and focused and engaged in the world around us. But too much stress can leave us anxious, depressed, physically and mentally uncomfortable. Now, according to the latest health and safety executive statistics, no surprise that women between the ages of 35 and 54, midlife, are likely to be juggling many roles, such as mother, carer of elderly relatives and parents, homemaker, spouse, and sometimes major breadwinner as well, generally experience significant stress. Now, stress can manifest into both physical and emotional problems, which can affect the quality of a person's life. And if you add that to the normal hormone perturbations that occur in perimenopause, it can be a really bad combination. Now, studies have found that women at midlife who experience more stressful life changes don't really do as well. They tend to have higher body mass index, which can be from stress eating or not taking the time to eat and recognize those internal cues of being full, of taking time to pre-prepare food so that you're not stopping in that fast food line. In fact, my husband, Tom, was just saying, oh, I remember being so busy with three sons and all the sports activities and work and community work and volunteering and being responsive to family members that when you're rushing to feed your kids and get to the sports field, like the baseball coaches always wanted 2 hours in advance, which was crazy. You know, sometimes just driving through fast food to grab that. And of course, that's not healthy. And also the thing that I certainly noticed when I was in that really crunch time period, and now I feel like I'm in it again because I'm doing so much with my grandchildren. And I always like to say that my specialty women's health fellows are like daughters. So I have a whole bunch of adult daughters with exciting things going on in their life and even good things. Just the volume of interaction and commitments, while can be good for your health, can sometimes stretch the limit a little bit. And for me, when I was stressed, I didn't really necessarily turn to junk food because food is medicine and you are what you eat. And we've had several podcasts on superfoods and being healthy. But the one thing that was my weakness was sleep. And if you don't get enough sleep, then you have higher cortisol levels, which are stress hormones, which tend to make you gain weight around the belly, tend to have you be more anxious. And for people who don't sleep enough, who don't feel good, who gain weight, who feel general overall stress, of course, there is lower life satisfaction and potentially a shortened lifespan. Now, I've done a previous podcast in season one on anxiety and how anxiety can shorten your telomeres. And that's a sign of biologic molecular aging. So we certainly don't want that. Now, I hope to have my PhD son, Stetson, who's a molecular biologist and cancer geneticist, back on to discuss anti-aging in the future in this season. So we do have a huge bulk of studies that show that stress is harmful on the body, especially during midlife when women naturally are experiencing the hormone fluctuations of perimenopause. So I want to talk about how to control stress, how to recognize it when it's more than just stress, and when you might need to reach out to your healthcare team for help. So a few years ago, I authored a column on speakingofwomenshealth.com. And if you don't already have that bookmarked on your phone or computer or iPad, just go to speakingofwomenshealth.com and just either hit bookmark or add to your screen. It won't take up any space. And you can refer to that and search because it's an excellent health library. There's so much great information. So I wrote about midlife and depression and what is the true connection. So an age-old question is, does menopause cause depression? The short answer is no, but the long answer is yes, potentially. So mood swings, feeling blue, crying for no reason, is it the change of life? Well, yes and no. For many of us, midlife can bring on new and exciting adventures, but also it can bring on stressful challenges because raising teenagers can be challenging. Caring for an elderly relative, being an empty nester for the first time. Oh, I remember my last son Grayson's last championship run in baseball. Our boys were all such great baseball players and played travel and played nationally. And he, as a young high schooler, all the way through his senior year, helped lead their team deep into the championships. And I remember being at the last game where they lost, and that was the end of the road. They weren't going to states, and realizing, oh my goodness, this is the last high school baseball game I'm going to be at as a parent. Now, hopefully, with my grandson Lincoln, we'll see. He may be a lefty. We don't know yet, but hopefully in the future, there might be more family baseball games or softball games with my granddaughters. But it does mark time, and it does mark phases in life that you're not going to get back. So as I tell my children who are busy raising children, enjoy it because it does go by fast. There's only one first birthday. So other things that can happen at midlife that can be very stressful can be dealing with a divorce. And if you didn't catch the great podcast I had with my friend and international family lawyer and great golfer, Ava Saulnier, go back and listen to that. Because even if you personally, thankfully, luckily, don't have to go through divorce, chances are there's somebody in your social circle that is or will. Losing a loved one, death, that is a huge stressor. And if you didn't listen to last season's last episode where I interviewed the fabulous flamingo dancer and physician, Dr. Sylvia Perez Prato, on planning for end-of-life care. It's a sad, poignant topic, but it is very, very important. So all of these factors can weigh into people at different stages in their life to feel down in the dumps, right? Raising oppositional teenagers, right? Ladies, that can really be a strain when you're having hot flashes and skip periods. And sometimes these factors can all converge at the same time. So how does a woman know if she has clinical depression? So while menopause is not a major risk factor for depression, actually, women in their 30s raising children and not having time for themselves actually have a higher rate of depression. And I sometimes think that the nutritional strains of pregnancy and childbearing and breastfeeding, particularly if you don't replenish your vitamin D and your B complex and zinc and omega-3s, all of those things can have impacts on mood. So we can't emphasize eating healthy whole foods enough, staying away from sugar and seed oils and processed foods and fast foods and foods that have so many chemical additives. That really does go a long way, as does exercise. And we have a lot of great podcasts on types of exercise, the benefits of exercise. Now, hormones do affect the neurotransmitters in the brain. If you didn't listen to my last season's podcast on chocolate and how chocolate affects mood, and other things can affect mood, I think that's a good one to go back to listen to. Because we want healthy brain function. We want normal neurotransmitters. Many times I see women wanting to get into my practice for a menopause consult with a menopause expert such as myself because they think there's something wrong with their hormones. And if they have regular periods and they're younger women, it's not their hormones. It's their neurotransmitters. And really seeing another health professional is really best for them. I guess it's one of the things about having a good medical reputation like I have. People know about you and they want to see you for whatever thing that is befalling them. And it's terrible to have depression and have that. And luckily, we do have a lot of professionals that specialize in it. But I do caution women to not mistake sex hormone fluctuations for neurotransmitter problems. And certainly the classic menopausal symptoms like hot flashes and lack of sleep can trigger a poor mood and even precipitate depression. And women should be upfront with their healthcare team about their mental health history. Did you have postpartum depression? Some of it can be nutritional. A lot of it has to do with just not feeling prepared or supported for the time 24/7 job of motherhood. Women who've had premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMS, tend to be more predisposed to midlife depression. So how do you know if you are clinically depressed or just not feeling like yourself? Now, this is not medical advice. This is a podcast to empower you to be healthy and be strong and be in charge. But getting accurate health information sometimes is difficult, and women tend to use the internet for health information. And so that's why I've spent so much of my time, and I am so appreciative of my donors who have allowed me to produce health content that's accurate and non-biased and updated and engaging, because we wouldn't have the website speakingofwomenshealth.com or all of our social media, which is all named Speaking of Women's Health, or this podcast, which is termed Speaking of Women's Health, which you can subscribe for free or follow on any app that you listen to podcast. So getting back to that question, how do you know if you're clinically depressed or you're just not feeling like yourself? It's a great question. And to help a person identify if they may have clinical depression, I've listed questions that a healthcare provider may ask you, like, have you lost interest in hobbies or activities that you used to enjoy? I frequently will ask patients about their hobbies, and they might seem a little bit perplexed. Sometimes I like to make some social discussion while I'm typing in the electronic record because that's so time consuming. That's certainly a form of stressor for me because it's the record, it needs to be accurate, and it's very time consuming to do. But when I'm listening, since I am able to multitask, about their hobbies and their life, it tells me a whole lot about a person. And then sometimes I like to ask about where people go vacationing, because it's a way for me to vicariously, oh, where did you go in Italy? Oh, where did you go backpacking? Because it might be activities that I may never do in my life, but it's fun to listen about. But hobbies and activities and knowing if you still enjoy doing those things is very important, because a lot of people have anhedonia, which is total lack of enjoyment in things that previously gave them enjoyment. One of our great nurse practitioners in the Center for Specialized Women's Health, Dana Leslie, who we've had on the podcast and will have again, she has a lot of hobbies and interests, loves to hike and backpack and golf. And she just sent me this really cute picture of this golfer with a baby stroller with all the golf clubs and everything arranged. And it was so interesting because my husband and I were talking about how we gave up a lot of things that we enjoyed, hobbies and activities and even physical activity, to focus on our three children, since we both had demanding careers and there's only 24 hours in a day. So you can't have everything all at once in general, even if you have a lot of help. And I was saying how I didn't get to golf a lot when I was younger, and now I love to golf because I, you know, you can't really usually take children out on a golf course, but apparently they do have this contraption that you could actually maybe bring a toddler, although you'd certainly have to be careful and be on a course that didn't contain a lot of people. But it takes a lot of extra planning when people are busy and have a lot of commitments to maintain some of those social contacts and interests and hobbies. So ask yourself that, because if you have anhedonia, that's a big concern. The next domain is sleep. Do you have any trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? Or are you waking up early, early morning awakenings for no reason? The few times that's happened to me in my life, because I'm generally a good sleeper, it's usually an indication that there's some major stressor. Do you feel resentful or angry? Do you have outbursts for really no reason? Have you lost interest in sex? Do you feel worthless, unattractive, or do you feel guilty for no reason? Do you struggle to concentrate? Are your thoughts muddy and foggy? Do you worry or experience fears or delusions? Have you had periods of mania or mood elevations, where you go without sleep and have prolonged periods of activities that really are not normal or healthy, like excessive shopping or excessive sexual contact? Have you considered suicide? It's very important, if you've answered yes to any of these questions, you really need to get in and see a physician or a nurse practitioner or someone on the healthcare team right away. And it's important to understand that there is a 1-800 suicide line that we'll post in the show notes, and you should have that available. So what are some of the treatment options for depression? Certainly, I think lifestyle is so important. It makes such a huge impact, from daily exercise, healthy eating, talk therapy, or so-called cognitive behavioral therapy has shown in many studies to be equivalent to prescription antidepressant therapy. Many antidepressants have been used a long time and studied in adults. I don't think they should necessarily be transmitted to children and adolescents, because there is differences in the brains and the brain development. And I think there has been much too much medication of children, instead of getting them off electronics, getting them exercising, getting them eating healthy foods. I think there's a lot of negative effects of social media, particularly on our youth. And I'm sure it can be the same for people who are looking on Instagram at all these pretty women who seem to have everything in life going from them. And I think spending too much time on social media for anyone is not healthy. Vitamin deficiencies can certainly precipitate depression. I see it every day with vitamin D, B complex, and zinc. Light therapy can be very effective. And if depression occurs in the winter, and not everyone, like my brother used to feel pretty down in the gray winters of Ohio, and now he's in Alabama, where he's outside most of the year and living on a lake and doing physical activities that he enjoys. And he says he has much better energy and mental health. And not everyone can afford to move to a place that is sunnier. So light therapy with 10,000 lux of light for 30 minutes in the morning, September through April, is very effective. And that's why I think now that spring is in the air and these daffodil flowers are starting to bloom and the crocuses and the days are a little longer, people naturally feel brighter and peppier. But in severe cases of depression, you do need to see a psychiatrist who is a physician that specializes in mental health. It's important to note that if you're clinically depressed and you have menopausal symptoms, you need treatment for both conditions. And if you're depressed and having regular periods and it's not menopause, you still need to be treated by a physician.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
And as I mentioned, it's women in their 30s with young children who have the highest rate of depression. Now, next I'm going to go over answers to all your stress questions. And this was posted a decade ago on our website by Dr. Lynn Patamakiel, who I've known for several years. She did our two-year specialized women's health fellowship. And she is married to Mark, the love of her life, and she now has four children, three girls, and she got Matthew, her boy, just recently. And she works full-time as an internal medicine physician, and she's in our Center for Specialized Women's Health one day a week doing consultative work in obesity. And she has a lot on her plate, and she manages it very well. So she wrote a great column on stress. And she talks about how we all experience it to varying degrees in our lifetime. She talks about how stress is a subjective term, and she sees lots of women in her office who come in because of stress, but it's something we obviously can't measure, like we can measure your blood pressure or measure your blood sugar. It can affect blood pressure and mood and sleep and anxiety and the GI system. It can suppress your immune system and make you more likely to get cold sores. It can increase the risk of heart attack and stroke. It can affect fertility. And it can speed up the aging process, as I noted in my prior podcast on anxiety and shortening of the telomeres. She writes that in 1936, scientist Hans Selye was one of the first to define stress as the, quote, non-specific response of the body to any demands for change, end quote. And this scientist completed experiments on lab animals. He would expose them to stressful stimuli such as blaring lights, deafening noise, extremes of temperature. And he noted they all exhibited the same pathologic response of stomach ulcerations, shrinkage of the lymphoid tissue, adrenal gland enlargement, which are the stress hormones that produce the fight or flight hormones. So chronic stress led these animals to develop diseases like heart attack and stroke at a higher level. So stress can come from so many different factors. Financial stress, that's certainly been a much bigger issue for my patients recently with this economy. Stress from work, family relationships, and chronic health issues. And then sometimes the person themselves creates stress on themselves, such an attitude or perception. if people tend to be pessimistic and worry all the time, they're always seeing the glass half empty, or they don't have flexibility or resiliency, this can multiply stress. For some people, they can have external stressors such as the need to speak in public, and a lot of people have fear of public speaking. Others might love to be in the spotlight. So is all stress bad? No, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, it's not. And you have been listening to the Speaking of Women's Health podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Holly Thacker, and I'm going over content about stress since Stress Awareness Month is April, which we're in, and I'm going over some content that Dr. Lynn Patamakiel of our Center for Specialized Women's Health has produced. For women, she encourages weight-bearing exercise because it stimulates the osteoblasts that build bone. In the medical field, we use diagnostic cardiac stress testing to uncover decreased blood flow to the heart or heart blockages. So some people do perform better when there is some degree of stress because they have a deadline to be productive. But too much stress is counterproductive. So due to the surge in those stress hormones as cortisol, adrenaline, and epinephrine, there can be a faster heart rate, higher blood pressure, higher blood sugar, faster breathing rate. Now, the fight or flight reaction is important. If you have some external threat like a bear, you need a surge of energy to either fight the conflict or turn around and run as fast as you can. Cortisol, though, does increase the appetite and does increase fat deposition in the belly. So when does stress become unhealthy? Going back to our bones, if you have too much stress on your bones, instead of a positive effect, you can snap that bone. So too much stress is not good. So what are some warning signs when stress begins to affect us? Certainly if you're having trouble with your memory, concentration, your judgment, if you have a low mood, if you have flares of chronic pain or irritable bowel, if you get more infections because your immune system's suppressed, if you start turning to too much alcohol or smoking or prescription drugs to relax, those are all huge, huge red flags. So what are some simple tools that we can implement to cope with stress? So Dr. Patamakiel liked to use the acronym STRESS, STRESS. So the first S stands for sleep. You need at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep at night. Get rid of the distractions in your bedroom. Do not take your cell phone or tablet or laptop to bed. Your bed needs to be your sanctuary where you turn off and reboot. Sometimes anxiety from the stress can create a very restless night. So try implementing a 10-minute worry period in the morning to ruminate over things that bother you. Don't do this right before bedtime, and don't do this for the whole day. Try to avoid caffeine after 2 p.m. Keep your room dark and cool. And if you're having hot flashes or night sweats, we have so many options, hormonal and non-hormonal. So seek treatment for this. And if you're having a lot of sleep problems, please go back and listen to some of our podcasts in season one on sleep. T stands for talk it out. Don't keep your stress bottled up. Have a supportive network. Talk to your family or friends or a trusted advisor or counselor. Naming the stress out loud can be cathartic and can help you identify and organize your task instead of just having all this abstract worry in your brain. Now, this is my personal aside. I think that sometimes it's better to talk things out with girlfriends or females. I think a lot of men are wired to fix things. And sometimes when women just want to vent, their partner gets anxious because they think that they're asking their partner to fix something. And sometimes women just need to talk it out. So if you are going to talk about your stress to a male in your life, you may want to preface it that you're not asking them for their opinion or their ability to help you fix something, that you're just trying to vocalize it and talk it out. So STR, R is next, rest and relaxation. Every woman, despite how many hats you wear during the day, needs time to herself. So where am I exactly going to find this magical dye? Creating a protected time for yourself, even if it's just 10 or 15 minutes a day, is so important. Find something that you love to do that you can help unwind. It could be prayer. It could be meditation. It could be a hobby or sports. Invest time in yourself. You know, I've interviewed Dr. Ula Abed Al-Wahab a couple of times on PCOS and thyroid. And she talked about how she's a fabulous photographer and she's an artist. And she said, even though she's a busy mother of two young children and an endocrinologist, if she doesn't pursue those other artistic outlets, she cannot manage the stress. And that's what she does. So don't feel guilty, ladies, about getting out on that golf course. Maybe you can't do 18 holes, but maybe you can do 9 holes. Don't feel bad about scheduling time for yourself, especially for regular exercise or periodic social contacts. E stands for exercise and eat a healthy diet. And Dr. Patty Macchiel says she's cheating and she's using two E's because they're equally important, exercise and eating right. Under stress, your body releases that flood of stress hormones of the adrenaline and cortisol. So don't underestimate the ability of aerobic exercise to reduce pent-up tension and stress. In fact, as soon as I am done taping this podcast, that's where I'm headed to, is the gym. Generally, we recommend 10,000 steps per day. Some people do more, some people can do less, but it's important to set a record or set a goal rather, and then record what you're doing. Your diet is so important. Start your day out with a plan for healthy eating. Get rid of extra sugar, alcohol, and certainly nicotine, because these things just stress your body out more. S stands for a sense of control, and don't be afraid to say no. Women are not as good as saying no. And it's very interesting that toddlers learn how to say no before they learn how to say yes. And I think that's a natural protective mechanism. In fact, my granddaughter Artemis, she always could say no easily. And when I would ask her a question that I knew she wanted to say yes to, instead of saying yes, which she had the ability to vocalize that, she would just laugh to let me know that she was agreeing with me without saying yes. And I think that's a good resilient technique. Remember that you're in control and you should not feel guilty about identifying your limits. And distinguish the difference between what you must do and what you feel like you should do. This is something I struggle with during the holidays because there's so many things you want to do and memories and parties and special dishes. But sometimes it's important to limit what you do, let things go, try not to do everything, delegate tasks that you can delegate, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Now, if we were talking about the males that we know what the last S stands for. In fact, they might put it number one, S for sex. And sex is not only an integral part of a relationship between two adults, but it can be very important also to a woman's sense of well-being. Even if women don't naturally have as much of a sex drive or as high a testosterone, of course, as our male counterparts, sexual contact with your loved one and partner promotes the release of good hormones like dopamine. They're actually neurotransmitters. Serotonin is associated with satiety, both food satiety and sexual satiety. And exercise and sexual activity can help with the quality of sleep and stress reduction. And we have a lot of information about sexual function, sexual dysfunction, climax, sexual therapies. We have a new sex therapist who's joined our staff, and she's got some great content, and hopefully we'll get her on some future podcast. So thank you so much for joining me in the Sunflower House. in April. And if you enjoy this podcast, please share it with others. Please give us a 5-star rating. And, oh, if you have a question on a topic you want to hear, go to speakingofwomenshealth.com and do the contact us form on the link. And we'll go over some of your questions. And please subscribe if you don't already subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can catch our audiovisual podcast on Rumble or YouTube. Just look in speakingofwomenshealth.com.